Hachette Audio presents Cover Story, written by Celia Lasky, read by Sarah Beth Pfeiffer. For the public figures who've been told to hide, and the everyday people who wish to see them. Chapter 1. Before, Allie woke up every morning to her partner Natalie throwing open the bedroom door to let in their scruffy black and white terrier mix, Glenn. He'd bound onto the bed and stand on Allie's chest, licking her face and panting his warm trash breath. Natalie would kiss Allie and recount the details of Glenn's walk, which route they took, which neighborhood dogs they saw, whether Glenn had been in an agreeable mood or had been obstinate, and the quality and number of his poops. Natalie was an early riser and loved taking Glenn out in the morning, which was fine by Allie, since she preferred to sleep as late as possible. After Allie had heard all about Glenn's walk, she would usually recount a catastrophic dream she'd had. A flood, an earthquake, getting kidnapped by a murderer, Glenn getting hit by a car. She'd look at Natalie and Glenn and sigh, relieved that all was well. But now, the catastrophe is real. Allie still wakes up to Glenn, but not returning from his walk. He's been next to her, trying to rouse her for at least an hour. When Allie's alarm goes off and she finally begrudgingly opens her eyes, she immediately cries. This is how she has started each day since Natalie died exactly 1 year ago. In books and movies, grieving characters always say there's a fleeting, peaceful moment after waking up when they forget what happened. But Allie never experiences this. The instant she's conscious, the knowledge is present, nauseating her like a form of morning sickness, not for a new life, but for a lost one. Bright sunlight cuts through the blinds and birds outside chirp blithely. Allie wonders if birds stop singing when they're grieving, if grief is even an emotion they feel. Maybe what sounds like happy warbling to Allie is in fact a bird screaming into the void or calling out for a lost loved one. If she were a bird, Allie would fly straight up like a rocket until she reached the blackness of space. That's where she feels like her mind is now, in the blurry, indistinguishable line between the blue sky of life as we know it and the darkness of the great, mysterious beyond. But Allie's physical body is in sunny Los Angeles, where the weather never gives her the courtesy of matching her mood. It insists she get up, get over it. Glenn would also like her to get up. He emerges from under the covers to lick the tears from her cheeks and look at her hopefully with his human-esque hazel eyes. His face is two-thirds white on the left side and one-third black on the right, with the black fur curving around his eye like a wide letter C. On the white side of his face, his ear is also white, with faded black spots like a Dalmatian. This spotted ear is Allie's favorite feature of his, and she leans over to kiss it. I'm sorry, buddy. We'll go soon. Allie removes a thick night guard from her upper teeth and places it in a plastic container on her nightstand, which is covered in stacks of books, mainly short story collections by Alice Munro, James Baldwin, Laurie Moore, Zizi Packer, and George Saunders, a box of Cheez-Its, stray earplugs, and a value-sized container of ibuprofen for the headaches that debilitate her 4 to 5 times a week. This morning, she can already feel the pain poking at the base of her head, slightly above where her hair starts growing and just right of center, the spot where massage therapists sometimes press their thumb like it's a magic button that releases all the body's tension. If someone could keep their thumb pinned on that button 24 hours a day, Allie thinks she could feel like a functional human. Instead, she stretches her neck to either side, then pulls her mouth as far apart as she can to rotate her jaw in circles, pressing her pointer and middle fingers into the corner joints that connect her upper and lower jaw. Allie has ground her teeth at night since she was a teenager, but in the past year, she's chewed through 4 different night guards touted by their respective companies as indestructible. She swallows 2 ibuprofen for the headache, a probiotic for her irritable bowel syndrome, a vitamin D for her body's deficiency thereof, and a birth control pill for her ovarian cysts. The fact that she, a lesbian, must take birth control always strikes her as annoyingly ironic. On top of ZZ Packers drinking coffee elsewhere, Allie's BlackBerry vibrates with a text from her best friend, Dana. Thinking about you, remember to be kind to yourself today, and I'll see you tonight for dinner. Allie doesn't reply to the text and instead opens her Dell laptop to check her work email, her stomach surging and chest tightening as she prays no catastrophes have struck since she went to bed. Allie is a publicist at a well-known firm that specializes in public relations for celebrities, and you never know what kind of trouble they're going to get into. Plus, the whole PR culture is to treat everything as a matter of life and death. A recent career survey ranked public relations executive as the 8th most stressful job, behind actual life or death occupations like soldier, police officer, firefighter, and airline pilot. Allie doesn't view her work with such gravity. She sees her position as that of a glorified babysitter with a laptop, managing the moods and bad behavior of adult children. She never would have chosen this career, but her first job out of college was as a receptionist at a PR firm, and she ended up ambivalently climbing rung after rung on the publicity ladder due to her outsized student loan payments and what bosses called her knack for the job, which Allie thought was simply having a modicum of competence and responsibility. It was like a wave had carried her to the shore of a land where she'd never intended to live, and she'd stayed simply because it was easier. She always used to tell herself she would quit and find a job that suited her better, but no career consists of reading and writing short stories, which is all she truly wants to do, so any job would likely feel as pointless to her as PR. Besides, 35 is a little late to switch careers and climb the ladder all over again. And most days, Allie is resigned to her fate. The job provides stability and excellent health insurance, and for a person with an untreated anxiety disorder and a side of hypochondria, stability and excellent health insurance are necessities. Shockingly, this morning her inbox contains no emergencies, which is so rare it's like the blooming of a corpse flower. Instead, it's the usual trash heap of press requests, pitch responses, and media inquiries. She checks the weather, 76 degrees currently with a high of 89, which makes her groan. It's early September, which for most places in this hemisphere would mean cooling temperatures, but in LA, they're still hitting the high 80s or the 90s, and this will continue well into October and maybe even November. NASA scientists recently said 2005 was on track to be the warmest year in over a century. Allie can't believe people continue to deny climate change when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans only days ago, Photos of the disaster flood.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?